Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to BOLLandBranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Big thanks to our sponsor, 16 Degrees Coaching. Do you feel stuck in your current job? Do you wish you had a career you loved? James from 16 Degrees Coaching specializes in working with people like you. He'll help you find clarity in what you want to do next, even when you have no idea yourself, and confidence to move forwards. To see the success James has had in helping others with their careers, and to find out what he can do for you, visit his website, 16degreescoaching.co.uk, to book a free consultation, or follow the link on ours. Hello, and welcome to the Backstory Podcast. I'm Claire, and this is episode 5 of season 1. On the surface, this is a story about Isabella, who received a diagnosis of autism as an adult. But actually, we think it's about more than that. It's about whether there's a tipping point between what we might call a character trait and what we class as a disorder or condition. Susie went to meet Isabella and her family to find out more.
There was an incident. I remember my father getting quite annoyed and saying, you know, you're not normal. You know, there's something, you know, you're not normal. And I mean, he sort of had a point, but I was on the promenade and I was sort of flashing my skirt around and sort of flashing my knickers. And I remember thinking I was doing it out of devilment, really, because, you know, he obviously found me irritating at that point and thought that was totally inappropriate. And yeah, I suppose it was because I was in my 20s, but it still makes me laugh.
Isabella and I had a good long chat on the phone before we met. She's very articulate, very polite and friendly, and also quite precise in her manner. It's a style that I get, and I really warmed to her. We agreed that I'd go to her house to do the interview, but this is no small thing. Having people in her house can be quite hard for Isabella. I asked whether there were things that I could do to make it easier, and I was told that taking my shoes off and not making a mess would be helpful. Neat and tidy are my middle names, so I felt I was on safe ground here. In fact, Isabella's preferences were so similar to my own that I found myself wondering whether there was really a condition here. She sounded too much like me. As soon as I pulled up, I could see that Isabella was apprehensive. She was very welcoming and polite, but she kind of avoided eye contact and she seemed on edge. It seemed that perhaps there was a condition here, something more than my own preference for things being just so. I took my shoes off and went inside. Isabella lives with her husband, Edward, and her two children, Catherine and Harry, from a previous marriage. Catherine was out at college, but you'll be hearing not just from Isabella, but from Edward and from Harry. Harry has a diagnosis of autism and he's home educated.
I was diagnosed when I was about 10.
So, a house where half the occupants have autism and half are neurotypical, a phrase I learnt from Edward. Their home is full of evidence of interesting pastimes, sewing, reading, model making. Edward and Isabella enjoy reenactment, getting together with other people to dress up and reenact an historical event or period in time. I started by asking Isabella what she was like as a little girl.
I think I worried a lot about a lot of things. And I always felt that the people in the family liked me least of all. I was very good at occupying myself and I've always been very adventurous.
Isabella had good friends at school. There were some problems with other girls, but it didn't seem that there was anything significant. She didn't work hard, especially when she wasn't interested in something, and her parents didn't push her. Knowing what she knows now, I wondered whether her autism had affected her performance at school.
Up until fairly recently, it was considered that it only affected boys. Girls are far better at, in inverted commas, behaving normally. So the condition tends to get missed.
So, although not traumatic, the school years passed by fairly unsuccessfully, without Isabella really achieving her potential. As she moved into adulthood, her relationships didn't run smoothly.
Absolute disaster. One disaster to another. Men would initially be attracted to me because I was different. I mean, the phrase, oh, I've never met anyone like you before. That was a novelty to begin with. They would be attracted to me. I think I'm very bouncy and enthusiastic. I've got quite a wicked, naughty sort of sense of humour.
Isabella married early, at just 20. He was in the forces and stationed abroad, and she was keen to escape her home life. But her focus was on the wedding and all the accompanying paraphernalia, not on the marriage that would follow.
Became completely fixated on getting married, totally and utterly obsessed with the whole affair. Just the dress and the bridesmaids, the flowers, everything, you know, just so excited to be getting married, far more excited to be getting married than actually being married.
She knew almost from before it happened that the marriage wasn't a good idea.
On the wedding night, I remember feeling this really strange feeling of, oh my word, what have I done?
Her first marriage ended and Isabella returned to England. She met her second husband. This relationship should have worked.
Except I was reaching my late 20s. I was approaching my 30th birthday and I had become broody. And I'd never been interested in having children. And I became broody and I wanted children. And I just did not get pregnant.
And so, in the absence of a longed-for pregnancy, her second marriage ended. Isabella met her third husband, a man she describes as deeply destructive, a compulsive liar, terrible with money. But, crucially, she got pregnant and had their first child, then their second. She hoped he would change, but no surprises, he didn't, and Isabella's third marriage broke down. During this period, Isabella had met Edward, who was also in another relationship, and they became friendly. Edward was drawn to Isabella's sparky character.
My first impressions was this enthusiastic, bubbly, knowledgeable, bright, shiny person.
Was there anything about her behaviour or about her demeanour that made you wonder whether there was a difference there?
I've always been attracted to difference. People who were bright, people who were prepared to do different things, people who were somehow shinier. And she fulfilled that.
So, spoiler alert, this one was a keeper. Edward loved Isabella's character, her idiosyncrasies. But she was wondering whether those idiosyncrasies were something more, whether she might be autistic. But Edward felt that she was too talkative, too outgoing.
We had a discussion in a cafe and we were talking about somebody on the spectrum or something. And I said, you know, it sounds like me, doesn't it? And that's when he actually said to me, oh, no, you're far too communicative and whatever.
Edward's background was in special educational needs and he'd worked in a school for children with autism. But even with all this experience, it still didn't appear plausible to him that Isabella might be autistic. She just didn't fit the pattern.
Gradually, it's the anxiety that I'd always known in Isabella, I assumed would pass when she was happy, when she was... Not that I was the knight in the shining armour, but as we developed a stable and a happy home, that the anxieties would stop. And they didn't. And I think we both realised that the anxieties were much more deep-seated and much more to do with Isabella's place in the world rather than her place within a relationship.
But I was experiencing very high anxiety and feeling very down, and I must have just gone on the computer and done a little bit of research, and I just remember reading something. It said, if this is making sense, then you chances are you are on the spectrum.
My initial reaction was, don't think that's true. But the more we looked at it, the more we realised that actually it made sense, and it made sense of the anxieties, the worries, the fears, the difficulties that Isabella had had all through her life and was still feeling.
I've spoken before about what I think a diagnosis means. I know for some people it can be negative and feel like a label, but I think it can also mean a validation of how you feel, a reassurance that it's not your imagination, that something really is going on and you're not the only one. It gives you an explanation, a framework for understanding, and a hope that there might be help or treatment available. But Isabella's diagnosis affected Edward too.
It affected me in a strange way. I felt it was good, but I felt, can I rise to the challenge? That sounds awful, but it, with working for so long with children with autism, to realise that my wife had this cluster of anxieties, I initially fought it, I think, and then I just talked to myself very firmly and said, look, you know, you've been an apostle for this different way of thinking for so long. Just carry it through.
Getting a diagnosis helped Isabella and Edward to begin to make sense of how she'd always felt.
It gives you framework for not necessarily... there is no such thing as a cure, thank God, but it actually working within those sets of anxieties and troubles and worries that anyone with autism of any description will find living in a world designed by neurotypicals for neurotypicals.
Neurotypicals. Useful phrase, that. The diagnosis also brought a sense of fellowship with other people with autism.
The knowledge that there are other people out there who share the worries and the anxieties and the joys with them. We belong to this group of reenactors, a lot of whom are undiagnosed people with autism. They've got spiky interests. They can function perfectly well as an 18th century, 17th century, 16th century person, but find it a bit more difficult to react to the world as it is now.
I asked Isabella to tell me about her diagnosis.
It was PDD-NOS, Pervasive Developmental Disorder Not Otherwise Specified. Basically, it's Asperger's for girls.
Heads up. We're not going to get bogged down with the terms here. The accepted umbrella term seems to be Autism Spectrum Disorder, or ASD, but terms such as Asperger's and autism seem to be used interchangeably by Isabella, and to be honest, I'm just going to take my lead from her. When you received your diagnosis, you said that was a real eye-opener. Can you tell me how that changed things for you, receiving the diagnosis?
It was huge relief, because sometimes I felt like I was going mad. I would get into a negative thought cycle with thoughts that would just go round and round and round in my head, just obsessive thoughts that I just could not get rid of them. And having the just knowing that my brain processes things differently was such a relief. I didn't feel any longer I was going crazy. I suddenly had a reason for feeling the way that I do. The knowledge of autism in girls was limited, and what was thought of was that people on the spectrum aren't terribly communicative, because obviously you do get non-verbal autistic people anyway, and that they're not terribly imaginative or creative. They can't empathise, they can't get in anybody else's shoes, blah, 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 blah. You know, there's lots and lots of myths about autism.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
The autistic spectrum diagnostic tool is not very girl friendly. So girls tend to come under the radar. Having read what I've read now, there is no doubt in my mind that, you know, I am considered to be Asperger's.
How do you think girls and women with autism hide it?
I think we're a little bit better at pretending. So we will act out a way to be, whereas I think men, socially, they don't bother quite so much. They don't think it's quite such a thing to worry about.
The theory is that because social interaction is more important to the female gender, then girls learn at a very early age to play the game better than boys do. In all the years I've had teaching, now I can recognise there were girls for whom I would now question whether they were NT or autistic spectrum.
I wanted to know more about Isabella's preference for rules.
Either it matters or it doesn't. You know, you can't say, oh, sometimes it matters, but other times it doesn't matter. That, to me, is so utterly confusing.
Do you know, you may relate to this or not, but I think Isabella gives a really good account of what the minutiae of daily life feels like.
You know, you can see I'm getting really annoyed about this.
This may not sound massively significant. Lots of us like rules and consistency. But think about your own job or your personal life, your relationships. The world isn't black and white. Rules aren't applied consistently. They're bent, they're ignored, judgment is applied. Having the flexibility to understand this and to tolerate it, to roll with it, is a great asset. And it's an asset that Isabella doesn't have. There are other ways in which Isabella is affected by her condition.
The bit that's supposed to happen in between you having the thought and then you sending the thought to the words that come out of your mouth. And if you know that this is going to upset or offend somebody, I don't seem to have that sort of filter. So somebody turning up unexpectedly on my doorstep, that's a bit of a Aspie nightmare for me, because, oh my gosh, I haven't cleaned the loo. Oh Lord, oh, they're going to come in. Oh, there's bits all over the kitchen floor. Oh, I haven't cleaned the worktop. Edward will say to me, they've come to see you. They don't really care what your house looks like. And I don't believe that for one second. If I go around somebody's house, I'm looking around thinking, okay, you haven't decobwebbed recently, have you? Doesn't mean I like that person any less at all, but I notice details like that. And because I notice details like that, I assume everybody else notices details like that. And Edward is saying, no, they don't. And I'm thinking, yes, they do.
Do you know what? I'm kind of with Isabella on this one. I think they do. I know I do.
Isabella will not necessarily know what people are thinking. Not just the way you and I might not know what people are thinking, but she will put thoughts into their heads that they would not necessarily have had.
When my children were in primary school, if a mum sort of looked at me a bit unpleasantly, or if I said hello to them and they seemed to not want to speak to me, I would go home and I would obsess over it. I would wonder what I had done wrong, what had I done to upset this person. I would talk to Edward and he would say, they're probably just in a hurry. They perhaps had a row with their husband, or maybe they've had a big bill. It's not you. I would automatically think it must be me. If a car horn goes, it's me. If someone shouts, it's me, you know. And I always respond that way. And I've even asked people, I've even said to people straight out, have I done something to upset you? And they've been like, no, not at all. And it's in my head. It is in my head.
I'm really interested in how it ties in with obsessive thoughts and anxiety. And I think what I'm struggling to, or what I'm trying to understand, I'm really trying to understand how it feels for you.
I think I've always got this thing that people don't like me. We'll be invited to some friends and I will be surprised that they want us to go. And my husband will say, you know, people like you, you know, you're lovely, people like us. But I'm always slightly surprised people do like me.
As well as her anxieties, Isabella finds some parts of everyday life deeply irritating.
Right. Litter. I would stop everybody dropping litter. I would have people abide by traffic laws. I think people being antisocial in a public place, swearing and just being generally obnoxious, I find that's so offensive. You own a dog, you feed your dog makes a mess, it is your responsibility.
And dog dirt. We can all understand that. See what I mean? But for Isabella, it's a real problem.
You put it in a bag and chuck it in the hedge, it's then going to not rot down. And, you know, I just don't understand.
So what might help?
Little things. It's little things that would make my world a lot less stressful. More awareness of the social rules.
Is it tiring?
Yes. Yeah. I have to hold back. I get very angry with things. And I have to refrain from, you know, sometimes it's just, will you get out of my way? I want to look at that. You're in my way. Move.
To go back to my original question, when does a character trait like my rather strong need for lists and things being done a certain way tip over into a condition or a disorder?
We never call AS, ASD. It's not a disorder in the house. It's not a series of problems. It's a series of joys. It's a series of different ways of doing things. It's a series of look, I can do things differently that you can't do.
One of the features of autism that this family helped me to appreciate is meticulousness, an attention to detail and a capacity to stick with something.
We make a lot of costume for our enactments, and I have never, ever seen hand sewing as good anywhere near as Isabella does. And she will sit for 3-4 hours getting a seam right, and it's a joy to behold. As someone for whom craftsmanship is important, that is just so fantastic. The other is the enthusiasm over tiny little things. We'd have a good meal and there was something that was just right, and she'd just explode into this happiness.
Edward thinks that people with autism may have made a significant contribution to our collective development.
There are some stone tools that have been made that have the smack of somebody who's made them with an attention to detail that goes beyond their functionality, and have made an incredibly beautiful, beautiful artifact. Spearheads, arrowheads, Clovis points especially. The standard of work and the care that's gone in, to me, speaks of someone who is prepared to devote days and days in producing something that is perfect.
You said, thank heavens there's no cure. Can you tell me what your feelings are about that, about a cure?
I'm different. I have interests that are strange. I've always done things which other people have thought very weird, like going off on my own on a motorbike for 2 weeks without anybody else. Solo diving, which is very much frowned upon, but I used to love. And I can accept that other people have different ways of doing things. And I grew up in a very tight community in the Midlands. Very soon realised it was a huge world out there where people had different interests, liked different music, worshipped different gods, wore different clothes, and these people were actually enhancing our experience of the world. Neurodiversity is something that I feel passionate about in my work in education. People's talents and people's proclivities and people's enthusiasms have got to be recognised. Otherwise, what kind of a society are we? I don't want monoculture. I don't want mononeural, whatever it is. I don't even know if there's a word for it. And I think it would actually be the ruin of our society.
He also feels there are certain common characteristics amongst children with ASD.
The fact that a lot of the children that I have taught with autism have got a fascination with Thomas the Tank Engine. Very, very simple, emotional, fixed expressions that are so easy to read, going on lines so that there's no change, there is no room for manoeuvre. It's you're either on the rails or you're not, you're on time or you're not.
I'm fairly sure Harry would disagree.
A lot of people believe that you have things like Thomas the Tank Engine, everyone's interested in that, and everyone's not.
What really comes across from this family is a true love of diversity. That phrase, neurodiversity, I love it. We experience life differently. It's not to deny that ASD can be massively challenging. But in this family, despite Isabella's love of order, they've somehow managed to adapt and to thrive. Harry's into podcasting too. We spoke about his aims for the future. They were pretty straightforward, a good job. But there was also a reminder in his answer of the toll taken by other people's response to autism.
I'm getting there, but I hope that I'll learn how to be able to be entirely social and acceptable. Because I don't really see Asperger's as a bad thing, but as some people might, I'm just hoping that it doesn't really hold me back. We are, different, yeah, but essentially get used to it.
I started this programme wondering whether I shared a few too many of the autistic characteristics. But actually, I've come away with a far more meaningful realisation, and one that has nothing to do with me. We're made of the same stuff, but the ratios are different. We perceive the world differently. That can cause problems, absolutely, but it can also contribute something amazing, that attention to detail, that different way of seeing the world. So if you could choose whether to keep it or be without it, what would you do?
But it's me. It's who I am. I don't consider that I have got a condition that you can remove. It's part of who I am. If you stick me in a room by myself, I haven't got it because all my problems and issues are to do with other people.
Thank you to Isabella, Edward and Harry for talking to us. What do you think? Is this something you have any experience of? This week, we'll be trying something new. Given that Susie and I spend hours talking about programmes long after they've gone out, we thought we'd open that conversation up to you. If you've got any questions from this programme, or even from an earlier programme, then let us know through the usual channels and look out for the discussion programme in your podcast feed. The first one is this Friday, 10th of November, the Backstory Backchat. Next time, we'll hear from Hina, a successful lawyer. If you're single or looking for a partner at the moment, you'll particularly want to listen to this one. In a world where dating choices are seemingly endless, Hina decided to take a very different approach. Catch that on the 21st of November. Don't forget to listen to previous episodes if you haven't already. We are The Backstory Podcast on Facebook and Instagram, and at The Backstory Pod on Twitter. We're currently working hard on season 2, so now's a good time to let us know what you like and what you don't like about the backstory. Be honest, we want to know what you think, but maybe not brutally honest, we're still finding our feet. Thank you so much for listening. See you next time. Thanks again to our sponsor, James, from 16 Degrees Coaching. Don't let your backstory define your future. Email him. James@16degreescoaching.co.uk.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.